Blog Talk Radio.
Program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great.
Hey, when was the last time we did two shows
on... had back shows like this?
I was just going to ask the same question. We haven't done that in a while, have we?
Yeah. Seemed like, a few years back, we had at least 1 week where we had, like, shows on every night. It was part of... A World Transformed series, I think.
When that was the name of the special series rather than the everyday show.
Yeah, exactly.
We did that, and we did have them on just about every night. But here we are on a Wednesday evening, having just done a show, and we've got another show coming up later this week. So I'm feeling pretty good about this. I think we're closing in on our 3-show week. This may be it. We've been saying it may be it, and I don't know. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm feeling pretty good.
I think we're good for it.
All right, so tonight we're going to bring some threads together. The show is called Miracle Meds and Meat, which is marvelous, and we're going to talk about some topics that have been in the news, some of which we've glanced off in recent shows, but all of them worth at least one more look, and certainly all worth looking at together in context. We're going to be talking about a new stem cell treatment. We're going to talk about a machine that allows you to make prescription drugs on demand. And we're going to talk about breakthroughs in lab-grown beef. So seemingly very different stories, but all having a common thread of big progress being made in medical technology, biotechnology, and all of them with really substantial implications for what things are going to be like in the very near future. This first one, of course, is just of overarching importance. New stem cell treatment using fat cells could repair any tissue in the body. Now, I was rereading this today, and do you know the thing that really jumped out at me, Stephen, as I'm reading this story? It was on sciencealert.com. New stem cell treatment using fat cells could repair any tissue in the body. Human trials are expected in 2017. The thing that really grabbed my attention here is how many different kinds of stem cells we're aware of today.
Right.
There was a time a few years ago when we said, well, there's mature cells and there's embryonic cells. We understood that much of a distinction. And then there was this new category of mature cells that had been turned back into pluripotent cells. In this story, they're actually talking about something called multipotent cells, which are different from pluripotent, which have applicability in some ways that pluripotent don't. Pluripotent being something like embryonic cells that you create with your own tissues, but they have this unfortunate tendency to immediately turn into tumors or to eventually turn into tumors, which is not the direction you want to go. These multipotent cells don't do that. They like to turn into whatever they're supposed to be. So you can take human fat cells and basically turn them into stem cells that will repair heart tissue or lung tissue or your foot or, your eye. Basically, all that differentiation can be reverse engineered and then engineered back in. And it seems like what they're describing here is really what everybody was kind of hoping for when we first heard about stem cell therapy. Right. I mean, this is the journey. Yeah, exactly. This is delivering on the promise of stem cell therapy. And it's been, as you read the story, it's been a long road. We start out with these embryonic stem cells and, a certain controversy over those. but probably, you know, more to the point, a lot of just disappointment in what they were and weren't able to do, right?
Right.
What taking those cells was even able to provide. And then you go through this long period of, well, we figured out enough to create some kind of stem cells out of mature cells, but we just couldn't get them to do what we wanted to do. And now you read this one, it's like, we're there? Are we there? What do you think? Is this really beginning the beginning of the age when we can create, you know, we can repair any, they talk about repairing any damage, but I want to take it one step further. Can you create any tissue in the body? I guess that's the question. If anything has gone wrong in the body, can it be repaired or replaced using this technology? What's your understanding from reading this?
Well, you know, I don't want to predict whether this is the breakthrough that leads to all the wonderful promise of stem cell therapy, but I believe that ultimately we will get there, whether this is the breakthrough or not, because, you know, I mean, we have a proof of concept, don't we, Phil? I mean, every time a child is born, the child is born brand new.
Right.
A child that you have when you're 30 years old is born, you know, 30 years old and worn out, and, you know, and then, you know, obviously human race wouldn't last long that way, would it? So, so we know that that cells that started out in an adult body, you know, gametes, and, you know, sperm and egg unite, you know, that come from adults unite and form a brand new person, and build every organ in that person's body. And so if it can be done, and I suspect it can, what happens there is beautiful, and it's a wonderful thing, the starting of life, but I don't think it's magic. I think that it can be done.
We know that human bodies can grow young, healthy organs and young, healthy skin and young, healthy eyes, right? We've seen it happen.
We know that it can be done.
Exist.
So since we know it can be done, I think we're playing in the right sandbox now.
To do
all these awesome things, like for example, growing, for somebody who's lost a limb, allowing someone to grow their limb back, or someone who's paralyzed to repair the spinal cords of those who have spinal injuries so that they can walk again. And someone who needs a new organ, allow them to grow it. And all of us who are aging, why couldn't allow us to replace our aging tissues with new tissues that are genetically identical to our own tissues, so that we don't have a rejection issue or something?
That to me, even if you're not talking about replacing yet,
yeah,
even if this story doesn't say that, new stem cell treatment using fat cells could repair any tissue in the body. Ultimately, what is aging except massive tissue damage throughout the body, right? I mean,
that's one
way of looking at it, right? And so if you can repair any tissue, it seems to me that there are huge potential anti-aging therapies that may develop from something like this.
And,
I think you're right. Think about it this way, Bill.
What's the oldest home in the United States, you know? It's probably about 300 years old,
right?
And
right.
Is the reason that home is still standing, or homes of that age are still standing, the reason is that they're immune from the damage of weather or just, you know, wear and tear inside the home? No. We just know everything we need to know about how to repair a home, so that we can do it and keep things up and going. So if we can understand the human body to that extent, there's just no reason we couldn't repair ourselves the same way. So do I think that we'll ever reach a point where aging won't be an issue? No, it'll always be an issue, but it'll be like a chronic health condition that we periodically need to be treated for.
Before that happens. This treatment offers tremendous hope for, you mentioned, you know, people with spinal cord injuries, to be able to regenerate
right.
damaged tissue there. Or anything about people who've been burned, you know, or scarred,
mm-hmm.
right? That sort of thing can be repaired. And then there's intermediate stages. You were talking about potentially regenerating a limb, right? Somewhere between...
What about the elderly who's lost sight from macular degeneration?
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Or someone who's, has Parkinson's disease or, you know, or Alzheimer's. I mean, these sorts of therapies that you could do, once we have a full understanding of how to replace or encourage the body to replace within the system already, you know, and this is not you cutting the body open to put in new tissue. This is, asking the body to produce new tissues like this, giving it the correct instructions and perhaps, giving a bit of a kickstart, but having the body do the work for you. That's obviously the goal and the dream here.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's that step alone will be huge if we can make any progress on any of those that you just mentioned with something like this. It's going to be absolutely transformative for medicine. But it's hard not to think about the potential for ultimately replacing organs, doing away with the need for transplants the way they're currently done, where people will do transplants of their own organs. Or,
right.
we were talking before the show about limb regeneration. This is a really interesting topic, because I know there's another story floating around we didn't include in the show tonight about how scientists are looking at how some species regenerate and how that same set of switches can be turned on in humans. The idea of people growing back limbs is a fascinating one. But that's something we might work up to in stages rather than suddenly have that ability.
Right. So, yeah, this is obviously very, very encouraging. There's been a false dawn or two where stem cells are concerned, but I feel like, the level of knowledge in this field is just increasing exponentially all the time, and it's going to be one of those things that's going to surprise us. I think when this field starts delivering, it'll deliver massive benefits to the human race very quickly once it starts delivering.
Absolutely. Well, now if you compare that story with this next one, because I think there's an interesting relationship between the two that hasn't been explored yet. This next one we may have talked about in a recent show. Certainly it's been all over Facebook and it's been on people's minds. This fridge-sized machine makes prescription drugs on demand. Now this one actually it's kind of similar when you think about it. They're working in different domains, right?
Right.
Using stem cells to treat any potential tissue damage in the body is not too different from a machine that can produce any drug. When you think about it, I mean, there's sort of a parallel. But the idea that that you can have this basically this appliance that's gonna produce drugs on demand. Well, let's talk about the practical applications first, because I think that's important. You think about things like field hospitals for the military, or
right.
Places where, remote areas where people just don't have access to, something comes up and somebody needs a particular drug and you don't have it, right? Well, now with something like this, you could have it, whatever it is, you'd be able to have it, a ship at sea, or, people who live in people in Antarctica, say, who need to be treated for something, or just many parts of the world that are far from major cities or far from the supply chain that makes it easy to get your hands on that. That stands out as kind of the original use case for something like this, but it's not the only one, is it?
No. I mean, if you had this ability to manufacture prescription drugs on demand, it would solve a lot of problems with supply chain issues. And I'm not just talking about, you know, developing countries or places where, you know, field hospital for the military or whatever. You know, any hospital, even in the developed world, you know, there are some drugs that are just not economically viable to produce. That because there's just maybe the condition that it treats is rare enough to where it's just there's just not a big enough a population of people who need that particular drug. So just it's not going to be produced in the normal supply chain. What is, you know? But let's say you understand the human body enough to know, Phil, that hey, this person needs this particular molecule, and you have this machine. You just type it in. It'd be like, you know, using a word processor just about, and it would produce what you need for this particular patient. It would be personalized medicine, the age of personalized medicine that we keep hearing about. It could, one of the enabling technologies is exactly this.
Absolutely.
You're not waiting on Merck or some big pharmaceutical company to, you know, to run the numbers and realize, hey, we can make a profit with this. You could do it for one single individual in one hospital.
And there's a problem today of what they call orphan drugs. Drugs that are effective, but the conditions that they treat are so rare, there's so little demand, that it's not a viable business model for anybody to manufacture them.
Right.
Something like this eliminates that problem. You know, it's as easy for this system to create an orphan drug as it is to create, you know, the most common antibiotic or whatever it would be. It's a real leveler, a real equalizer between things that are high demand and things that are very low demand, and it opens up the possibility of having new medications introduced to the market more easily because they won't be dependent on that huge supply chain. The idea that you have to be able to make, you know, tens of thousands of prescriptions filled in order for there to be a business case in order to support the R&D to make it happen, suddenly that model goes away. And I don't know what kind of, you know, I'm not sure what the development model that will come into place to replace that will be, or how
right.
people exactly make money off the drugs that are sold off this. That part, you know, it feels
well.
Like.
I would think that at first it would have a minimal impact. This kind of technology would at first have minimal impact on the existing pharmaceutical companies, but eventually, you get something like this that's, you know, you get version 3 or 4.0 of this technology, where it's fast enough, it's effective, it's you can produce it quickly. You know, it doesn't take a week to produce a particular drug. You know, it can do it quickly and cheaply and everything. Then these drug companies would that's a true challenge to their existence if they don't change. And the way they would have to change is become companies that devote themselves to research. On, you know, how can we become better at treating people using personalized medicine? You know, so these companies would basically become research foundations for studying genetics and coming up with the perfect medicine for particular problems in all these different case scenarios, and get paid that way. You know, I think that would be the challenge to one of these companies when this technology matures.
And ultimately, they might then be rivaled by something more like open source development, right?
Right.
There might be a new model of just open source drug development that's also adding, doing that kind of research, not necessarily in pursuit of profit, but just in pursuit of getting effective treatments out there. It'd be interesting to see how a completely different industry. We've seen the impact on the software industry of the introduction of open source. Pharmaceuticals could be one of the next big industries to face that challenge.
Right.
It'd be very interesting to see how that plays out.
We should also point out that this is one of those technologies, like all great new technologies, that could be abused. You know, you could definitely have a break the bad situation. You have, you know, if this, you know, if someone had use of a machine like this, they could create designer drugs that, you know, and you know, hit the streets with it, and you know, create, you know, and then before it's even illegal, and have a year or two of it being on the streets, technically not illegal because it, you know, the law hadn't been changed. And as soon as the law changes, bang, you know, a slightly different molecule, you hit the street with it.
Right.
And you could, I could imagine a awful drug drug war situation developing where you got, you know, someone who's unscrupulous with a machine like this, what they could do. So it's, yeah, it's, again, but it's one of those deals where the upside of this technology so far outweighs the downside that, you know, we will do it. If it's capable of being done, it will be done. And you know, we got the first version here already. So
do you think there will ever be a version of this that individuals have in their homes?
I think for the Breaking Bad reason, I think it would be illegal for an individual to have it. It would be one of those things that, you know, it'll be restricted to doctors and pharmacists.
Yeah, but seeing as doctors will become networked the same as everyone else, ultimately might be AIs.
If you've got an AI doctor in your home and strictly controlling it,
it's controlling it. As soon as you try to touch it or do anything untoward.
Yeah, there's a copter call because you were sampling your machine to try to make it make drugs for you, you know, bad drugs.
It might happen that way.
I can imagine it being in the home under those circumstances, particularly in the home of somebody that, you know, had some sort of chronic health condition that required a particular molecule. But, you know, still, you could, their local hospital could provide it, you know. And perhaps it wouldn't be needed in a home. Because what we're talking about with a machine like this is something that could service a lot more than just a family. You know?
A scaled-down version, I'm thinking, you know, for the home. Because
instead of a Mr. Coffee,
drugs,
it would be a Mr. Whatever,
If you deal with prescription drugs, I mean, there is a certain amount of hassle. Even when you do mail order, right, of, you know, having the stuff show up, if some of it's volatile, having it not, you know, it's shipped on ice and you got to be there and you got to receive it, then there's all that kind of stuff. I can actually see ultimately a market for something like this in the home. And tying it back to the previous story, assuming we've got the AI doctor in the house, we might have a similar machine that's processing our own stem cells. We'll all be... we'll be receiving treatments for some of those kinds of things in the home, potentially.
Well, that brings us to our next story then, doesn't it? I mean, the next story is lab-grown beef is now almost, you know, almost a thing, Phil. It's almost here.
Yep. The not-quite-vegetarian lab-grown hamburger could now be made for about $27 per pound if production were scaled up to the industrial level. Now, that's still... even more, I think, than you're going to pay for the best Kobe beef, right? Maybe not. But you know, there could be some beef in the world that's more expensive than that, but this hamburger is not that.
My thought, Phil, is it was, about a year or two ago that, you know, the $30,000 hamburger, you know, or
something crazy like
that.
That's right. So it's come down three orders of magnitude to $30 a pound, right?
Yeah, that's right. So all it needs to do really is come down another single order of magnitude, and
if you can get $6,
you would be beating the price of normal beef. I'm going to tell you, if it tastes good, if it tastes like beef, and it's, you know, and that's the nutrition of beef, and it's cheaper, you know, people will quickly, you know, there's nobody I know that enjoys eating a hamburger because. You know, they like the thought of cows dying. You know, there's people eat hamburgers because they taste good, and you know
they eat hamburgers because they like hamburgers. That's right.
And so if you provide them a hamburger where an animal doesn't have to die, that's I think you know, that's everybody would be happy with that. And so
I think that's true. Moreover, I think that it can come into the market ahead of that.
Right.
Because you can have it taste pretty good but not quite the same and cost twice as much, and some people will buy it. Right.
Right.
People buy grass-fed
beef.
Imagine
people that have been vegetarians for years on moral grounds, but, you know, they remember as a kid enjoying a hamburger. But you know what? Ever since I became an adult, I just gave it up because the thought of an animal dying so I could fill my stomach is just too much. I don't do that. I've been a vegetarian ever since. But, man, I would love to try another hamburger where an animal didn't die. And
right.
if you provide them with a hamburger, particularly somebody that hadn't had a hamburger in 10 years, it could be something that's not quite there. And to them, it might be the best hamburger ever. Because,
I mean,
you know,
they've been eating
soy burgers,
right? They've been eating veggie burgers, and, you know, I mean, yuck. Yeah,
no,
they don't like
it. Man, this is 10 times better than a tofu burger, you know?
Yeah. At least 10 times better. And I think there are some people who would answer the ethical call, just as there are people who buy organic. I mean, you know, people, there's a lot of good intentions that goes into shop, maybe a lot of virtue signaling that goes into, but I mean, people make a lot of these consumer decisions based on more than just, well, that tastes good, therefore I'll buy it, right? I mean, there is more going into it when people make those purchasing decisions, and I think that helps create the market. They still got to get it well under 27 a pound, I'm thinking.
Come down one more order of magnitude, and we'll all be.
But that, then, that, you know, to bring it back to our prescriptions in the home, stem cells in the home, one day, you know, will we just make all this stuff in the home, right? Will we,
right.
you know, we'll be like farmers growing our own, raising our own meat, right? We'll make sure, by the way, that you don't confuse the hamburger machine with the stem cell machine. You don't want to be like
a... Oh, gross, man.
I just thought of a science fiction story there. Yuck. But, But certainly, if you could have one, you could have the other, right? If you could have processing of your own stem cells in the home, you could definitely have processing of meat in the home. Do you think we'll get to that point, or is that more likely something that people? Yeah,
I think we will, but I think we'll be buying it long before it's available in Mr. Meat
right.
for your countertop. I think
that does sound delicious.
Yeah, I think they'll first do it in large quantities, and I think that's the way we'll see it. It'll be in our grocery store first.
It's interesting to think. You know, now I'm picturing something like a Keurig. What would you put into it, right? There'd have to be. You know, the thing
protein,
is, you still end up
having to buy it. I don't know. You'd have to have some sort of basic building blocks, wouldn't you?
Right.
If this stuff is being built, is it stem cells that are creating the meat as well? They're actually cloning. They're cloning the muscle tissue of a cow, aren't they?
That's right.
What's really happening here?
So. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see that unfold, but I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if in the near future, well, or, you know, the near term, or the midterm perhaps, we'll be making our own pills, repairing our own tissues, and growing our own burgers right in our homes. And on that very happy note, I think we're out of time. Steven, it's been great talking with you, and I guess we got another show coming up later this week.
That's right, on Friday.
Look forward to talking with you then. Thank you all for being with us, and until next time, live to see it.